All right, everyone, welcome to Tripping with Forrest. Today I'm going to share with you the most meaningful magic mushroom experience of my life. Before I begin, I want to make it clear that I'm not advocating for the use of illegal substances. This is simply a personal story that I want to share with you. So now on to the story. It was a beautiful, sunny day in the summer. I'd really been looking forward to this day for weeks. I'd been planning it, and I had planned to take the magic mushrooms with a close group of friends in a natural setting surrounded by trees and with a clear view of the sky. That would be ideal. As the day went on, we took our doses and settled into a comfortable spot to let the mushrooms take effect. At first, you know, everything seemed normal. The colors around me became more vibrant. I felt a sense of euphoria wash over me. But as the hours passed, I began to have some of the most profound and meaningful experiences of my life. I felt an intense connection to the natural world around me and a deep sense of unity with all living beings. I saw the beauty in everything, from the trees to the insects crawling around on the ground. I also had some intense insights about myself and my place in the world. You know, I realized that I had been living my life in a way that was not true to who I was, and that I needed to make some changes in order to be truly happy and fulfilled. The experience was both challenging and transformative, it's really stayed with me to this day. You know, it helped me to let go of my ego and embrace my true self, and it has allowed me to live my life in a more authentic and meaningful way. And that's basically it. I hope that by sharing this story with you, I've given you some insight into the power of magic mushrooms and the potential for personal growth that they offer. Thank you for listening. And that was completely written by AI. That was completely written by ChatGPT by OpenAI. My question that I posed to ChatGPT was, write me a personalized script for a solo podcast about the most meaningful magic mushroom experience. And it gave me all of that. In between the paragraphs, I did say a couple just colloquialisms like, you know, or just an or an ah, just to try to make it feel a little bit more natural, as if I wasn't reading it. But maybe you guys could tell that I was reading it. Maybe not. I don't know. You know, I asked it to make me a funny one. I tried to get it to put some personal details in there. And I got a really interesting response. So after that, I said, mention personal details. It said, I'm sorry, but as an artificial intelligence, I do not have personal experiences or details to share. I am here to provide general information and assistance to the best of my ability. Is there anything else I can help you with? So this could easily be adapted into a Google Assistant, a Siri, a Amazon Alexa. ChatGPT or a resource like this can be easily shifted into a voice assistant, but it can easily be shifted into a type of search engine, because basically that's what it is. It's condensing and conforming information to you in the way that you requested it. And it's doing that custom each time. It's really quite a fascinating technology. And as you can see by the story that it shot out, it wasn't able to give any personal experiences. That story was very vague. It had some of the kind of terms and the way that somebody might say things, but it didn't offer any actual experience. It didn't really tell you about anything. And it was just very vague because that's all it could do. Now, interestingly enough, I asked it to do this for me yesterday. And now today, I basically wrote the same thing in again, because I was going to, one thing you can do with this is you can actually respond to it writing out a script for me. You can actually respond and say, make it funnier. And it will do that. It will generate a new script, but have some sort of comedic thing in it. Now, I started to try to do that today, and I get a message about how this program is not created to promote illegal substances, and that illegal drugs can have serious consequences, and that it recommends reaching out to a mental health professional or seeking help from an organization such as a Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. And so that is very interesting. I wonder if that's an update just based on what I've been feeding it, because I really have just tried to use this for, I've tried to use it for a couple little things like van life video ideas, just asking kind of about where it could go, you know, asking it some bigger questions. But over the past couple of days, I've just been asking it to generate these stories about magic mushrooms because I wanted to try and do this podcast and have that as something to talk about. So I don't know if that's now realized based on what I've been feeding it, that it no longer talks to those things about for me, or if that's just an update. And I did think, you know, yesterday when I first punched this in, that it talking about this positive experience about taking magic mushrooms was very interesting, considering that this was developed in a country where that is illegal federally. And there's a small pocket on the northwest of the country which has it legalized locally. But basically, it's illegal in that country. So I thought it was very interesting that it was telling a positive story about this, that it was seeming, you know, saying that it was impactful and all that. And I asked it, you know, the first thing I asked it to do about magic mushrooms was write me a story about taking magic mushrooms for the first time. So it never really, so in here, you know, I can read this one out too. And this was just a story. So it's not in a podcast format, which is what I changed it after. You know, the next thing I asked it was make it a solo podcast trip episode. But here's the first thing that it spit out to me when I asked it about magic mushrooms. It was a hot summer day when Alex decided to try magic mushrooms for the first time. He had heard a lot about the intense mind-altering effects of this psychedelic fungi, and he was curious to see what all the fuss was about. So with a sense of excitement and trepidation, he acquired a small bag of dried mushrooms for a friend and headed off to a secluded spot in the woods to take them. As he munched on the mushrooms, he felt a sense of anticipation building inside him, and he wasn't sure what to expect, but he knew whatever happened, it was going to be an interesting experience. As the mushrooms began to take effect, Alex felt his perception of reality start to shift. Colors seemed to be more vibrant and intense, and the trees and plants around him seemed to take on a life of their own. As the trip progressed, Alex found himself transported to a strange and wondrous world where everything seemed to be infused with a sense of magic and mystery. He saw patterns and shapes in the clouds that he had never noticed before, and he felt a deep sense of connection to the natural world around him. Eventually, the trip began to come to an end, and Alex found himself returning to reality. As he walked back through the woods, he couldn't help but feel a sense of awe and gratitude for the amazing experience he had just had. He knew that he would never forget the magic of that day, and he couldn't wait to try magic mushrooms again. Now you tell me that this AI wasn't just promoting magic mushrooms. He couldn't wait to try magic mushrooms again. What an amazing experience he had had. These are how this story ends. You know, that's an uplifting, powerful experience. And I think that's pretty cool. But now I'm getting this this new illegal substance use warning. So I think that's very interesting. And, you know, a look into the future of this. How do these things get regulated? You know, Google doesn't show you every result for everything. There are things that it censors, and rightfully so in a lot of ways. And, you know, where does that censorship stop? And that's the whole, I mean, that's such a thing that people love to talk about, is censorship and words and, you know, just where the line should be drawn or shouldn't be drawn. But anyway, I just thought that was interesting, you know, and then I asked them to make it into a solo podcast and basically just went into the format of the first one that I did. And, you know, it really offered up quite a lot of information. And I thought, you know, there was a lot of vagueness in that story one, but I did think that it was telling a story that I could imagine in some sense. You know, the vagueness is he saw patterns and shapes in the clouds that he had never noticed before. What does that even mean? patterns and shapes in the clouds. Oh, there's a rabbit in the clouds, you know, like when you do when you're just a child looking up at the clouds. But no, you know, it's supposed to say that that is something that is that's psychedelic induced. And, you know, you could elaborate on that if you were a writer. You could, man, I wish that this existed when I was in high school, because I would have used the hell out of this thing to write all of my English lessons, and I would just add in details. I would expand on things, and I would have the whole framework of a story on a subject I would need to do. This has basically replaced, this is starting to come up with ideas and like I said, frameworks for creative people. I asked it to create a script for me for a YouTube video, for instance. I also asked it for van life YouTube video ideas, and it gave me 5 different ideas, and I could have been like, give me 5 more, give me 5 more, give me 5 more, and it would have just exhausted the options. And then, you know, you can get it to write you a script about that specific one. So, you know, van life tips and tricks is number 4 on that list. Then I could ask OpenGPT to write me a script about 5 van life tips and tricks. And I could literally sit in front of a camera, say those out. They don't have to be personal to what I actually believe. And I would have a piece of content. And even more so, I mean, the amount of content that's going to be created by automation channels where they literally get like an artificial voice to read out text, you know, a text speech program you can just punch these scripts into, and then you can have an AI generate a video off of images from stock photos, and you could have a video, boom, just created like that. So will it be of high quality? No, but it will be out there, and it will be, you know, you can also get a program that suggests titles and descriptions, and you just automate the entire process. And if that's out there, it can gain traction in that niche that it exists in, and it can muddy the water of people actually creating individual personal experiences videos. It's no longer YouTube. It is AI tube. It is internet tube. It is the certain type of AI, you know. OpenGPT will just be one of many types of bots that can do this to varying degrees and with their own unique styles. And there will be preferences people will have for certain ones, but they will eventually get to a place where they can create. Right now, basically what I'm saying is this, with a couple other little programs and some code stitching it all together, this could create shitty educational video essay type videos or informational type videos in all sorts of different fashions on YouTube right now with the current technology. And I can see how this technology could advance rapidly based on the AI generation of images, and it could actually create unique images based on whatever input it was given, and it could actually create its own input. You could have code basically writing to whatever is hitting in Google Trends, you know, whatever people are looking for on YouTube. It could create a video based on different niches, and it could just be on what people are looking for. And it could create videos on every single thing that people are looking for, or just dominate certain regions of interest. And it can do that now shittily with some code. But in the future, it could do it well. And this AI could easily, in the future, I don't know how many years it will take, but basically, when I was younger, there was a chatbot on the internet, and it was not impressive. So if we think about that timeline, when was that? That was maybe, I guess that was more than 10 years ago. That was probably 15 years ago, there was a chatbot on Google. I don't know. It wasn't on Google. It was on some website. It wasn't very impressive. It didn't blow my mind like OpenAI's ChatGPT does. But it was basically the same concept. And it didn't blow my mind. So, you know, if we can think 15 years it took to create a chatbot that is pretty damn interesting, actually, and is pretty sophisticated, but it's still just a chatbot. And it's still just that same concept that existed, or at least, you know, I saw it 15 years ago. And what I'm saying is eventually this and AI generated art and a few other programs will be able to create movies and TV shows of the quality that humans can create. I mean, humans have got amazing at creating art. And, you know, this, the world of cinema has existed for over 100 years now. And it developed a lot since then. You know, it was very, very basic. And I think that this is basically at the level of a you know, terrible video essay YouTuber. And there's a lot of YouTubers making really great stuff out there, but how long before you are watching an AI generated piece of YouTube content, completely AI generated YouTube content, that you think is more valuable than some of the top human creators, or as valuable? I don't know how long that will take, but that is an easy foreseeable future. Definitely in my lifetime, maybe another 15 years, you know. A lot of it is time, because the technology has to all work together. There needs to be able to have the computing power, the server base, the data information. So those are all different types of technology built into, it's not just the technology to code a program like OpenGPT or that chatbot 15 years ago. It's all of the other technology that also has to match up to it. And what I see in this world right now is this is where a lot of effort is put. So even though it took 15 years to get from that chatbot to this, and maybe longer, I don't know when that chatbot that I'm talking about existed, or when a chatbot. That's what I've been saying, right? I don't know, I'm tripping, but I don't know if it was 15 years or more or whatever, but what I'm saying is there wasn't as much time and effort. Every single one of those 15 years, there wasn't an equal amount of effort and human power put behind, and technology and money and all of that stuff put behind that technology. That is ramped up. The importance, you know, everybody understands AI, people talk about it, you know, everybody talks about it, and it's where a lot of people's effort is going towards developing currently. So I think that it will speed up, and as it speeds up, it'll be exponentially quicker, because the problems begin to be solved, can become solved by the technology itself. For instance, you can use ChatGPT to completely code programs for you. You can ask it to code a game. You can copy and paste that code into basically a website that reads that code and spits out whatever it's created, and you'll have a game. And it won't be a very sophisticated game, but you can ask for more sophisticated things, and that creates a framework. Just like I asked for a sophisticated story about the first time taking magic mushroom. That wasn't just tell me a story or tell me a story about a person. It was tell me a story about this specific thing. And so if you do that with whatever specific program you're trying to code, it will shoot out the framework. And then as opposed to writing code, you are actually fixing bugs, because there will be problems with that code currently based on the limitations of ChatGPT today. But as we potentially saw, or as I potentially witnessed and spoke to you, is this might be learning quickly, because within a day, it's now not letting me do stories using it about magic mushrooms. So maybe this is being developed very, very quickly, and there's safeguards being put up to protect themselves legally. They don't want to get sued for promoting, you know, something that could harm somebody. You know, how would they be at fault? You know, companies open themselves by doing anything in this world. You open yourself up to a lawsuit, so you have to be conscious of what you do, I suppose. So maybe that just happened. I don't know, but there's definitely people I've seen that are trying to use this to code trading bots, and there's people trying to use it to create YouTube scripts, and people are trying to use it to create money and things that create money. Basically, it has become a big tool very, very quickly, and I think it will continue to do so, and it may form itself very rapidly into a voice assistant. I think that's such a simple way to utilize this at such a better degree than the current search-based ones that we have on the market. Okay, so I'm trying to research a little bit about OpenAI itself, seeing that there's been about 8 investors into OpenAI, Bedrock Capital, which is a VC, Sequoia Capital, VC, Andreessen Horowitz, and that's a firm as well, VC, Tiger Global Management, another investment firm, and Microsoft, which is a company, you know, Microsoft, old Billiard Gates over there, Kosla Ventures, another VC, and Reid Hoffman Foundation. Reid Hoffman is the owner of Netflix, or the founder, I guess, and Y Combinator, which is a startup accelerator. So they do a ton of investments, Y Combinator. What's interesting here is Reid Hoffman Foundation and Kosla Ventures and Microsoft are all lead investors. So that means that they've probably taken a lot of the personal ownership of this. So they've taken some form of ownership based on those investments. Now, it says on OpenAI that OpenAI LP is governed by the board of the OpenAI nonprofit, comprised of OpenAI LP, blah, 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 blah. And so there's a bunch of, you know, chairman, president, chief scientist, CEO. Our investors include Microsoft, Reid Hoffman's Charitable Foundation, and Kosla Ventures. Those are their three biggest. And they have pricing as well. You can actually buy stuff at OpenAI right now. You can buy, and you can start with $18 of free credit, but you can buy... basically the ChatGPT is just a free kind of research thing that they're basically opening it up so that people will use it, so they can use the data from it being used to improve it probably, and maybe integrate it into other things like I've been talking. So you can use their DALL-E program on OpenAI, and it ranges from 16 to 20 cents per image, and language models. So I don't know what that's necessarily for. I don't really know what a language model is, but they have Ada, Babbage, Curry, and DaVinci, and they charge some kind of tokens. I don't know, maybe when you have to buy tokens from them and then pay, but it's like fractions of a penny. I don't know. Anyway, very cheap. And advanced search, embedding models. So they do have some things that they charge for, which means even though they're run by a nonprofit, that's what's confusing about that sentence there. OpenAI LP is governed by a board of the OpenAI nonprofit. So there's that's two different entities, and one is controlling the other. all these people that are in a nonprofit are governing OpenAI LP, which seems like to me a for-profit type of business. And Microsoft being one of the big ones there. Now, what's interesting about that is Microsoft owns Cortana, which I never mentioned because it's definitely the lesser used of the voice assistants, but it's Microsoft's version of a voice assistant, which works on your PC if you have a Windows computer. And the other thing that's interesting is Alexa uses Bing to search things, and Bing is owned by Microsoft. And those are two things that are really not performing well compared to the market that they're in. The voice assistant is going to Siri, it's going to Alexa, it's going to Google Assistant. The search is going to Google, and basically that's it. Bing currently has a 2.47% share of the worldwide search engine market. That is low. Google currently has market share of 92.13%. So that goes to show you how behind Microsoft is on this thing that is possibly still profitable. I mean, maybe it doesn't take that much to run Bing, as long as they're not, I don't know. But anyway, they could potentially, because they're so heavily invested in OpenAI, that might lead them to be able to adopt this technology and to, I mean, they don't own it, so they can't just take that technology and say, okay, now it's on Bing, but they have a foot in the door. And there might be some deals made there. And for me, I think Microsoft has positioned themselves very cleverly by being such a big investor in OpenAI, because I think what OpenAI is doing will fundamentally change the way we use the internet. And the internet is a huge part of all of our daily lives. So if something affects it, it's affecting us greatly. And when you affect something, that means that you're providing value, basically, which means that, you know, basically Microsoft is positioning themselves to create more value for people through this investment, that's for sure. So yeah, that's what I've been thinking about. I've been thinking about AI, I've been thinking about stories, I've been thinking about Bing, which is something that nobody ever thinks about. Maybe they think of Chandler Bing, but not Bing the search engine. And it's just an interesting time to see technology really form itself. And it's so interesting existing in the past and seeing something like I did with that chatbot and not really thinking, oh, this could go here or this could go there. But now seeing this, I think, oh, this could go here. You know, this could go into the future. I might be thinking about how that's happened. And that's what a futurist is. Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, thanks everyone for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed those AI-generated stories. And stay tuned for more episodes. I don't know what I'll talk about next time. On this show, you know, I've talked a lot about money. Investing is an interest of mine. Money is really important. It's a store of energy of ourselves. And basically, we can use it to create in this world. We can make all these different things happen just because of the money that we either use. And the more you accumulate of it, the more you can create. And it's just, it's a fascinating subject. And it's a lot easier sometimes to actually save money than it is to make money. So today's sponsor is Mint Mobile. And if you're in the States and you have a cell phone, you can probably save a lot of money by switching to Mint. I mean, Mint has these plans. It's like $15 a month, unlimited calling, unlimited texting, 5 gigabytes of data. They have 4G, 5G plans. And for $30, you can get unlimited data. included with that plan. And so it's like $30 unlimited data. And the internet is so powerful. We need to get on there. We need to learn. I mean, you're using the internet right now to listen to this, to download this. It's important to have, and you might be able to save a ton of money by switching to Mint. So check out the link in the description for Mint Mobile, and we get a kickback here. We get a small commission. So it really, really supports the show. It's super, super important to feel like I can actually do this and make a little bit of cash, this podcast. So it's going a long way, and it's really important for you to save money as well. So if you are spending too much on your mobile, go at least check it out. See if the coverage is good for you, if the service is good for you. And basically, it's a smart business as well. What they've done with Mint Mobile is they've basically done what more and more companies are doing to save money and to pass it on to consumers, which is not have a retail store. There's a lot of empty shopping malls out there in the world now because there's no need for companies like Mint Mobile to have a cell phone kiosk in the mall or whatever storefront. And so they can pass those savings from not having to rent and lease that space, not having to employ those people working there. They can employ people in a more concentrated fashion so they can have less employees and serve more people, basically. And they do it all online, all through the internet. And the customer service is supposedly pretty good still. That's the other thing too, is you don't want to like lose things by switching to Mint Mobile. So I would just recommend checking them out. See if it's a fit for you. Basically, when I ever have a problem on my cell phone, I'm calling them anyway. I'm not going into a store. That's just, you're just looking to get upcharged basically by going into a store anyway. So check it out. Links in the description, like I said.